number of years ago, I heard a speaker make a statement. He said, you're where you are because that's exactly where you want to be. Well, you know, I reflected on that. I was a young speaker just getting started, and that sounded pretty profound to me, sounded wise. And, you know, obviously I want to sound wise if I ever have a chance to. So I went around saying, you're where you are because that's exactly where you want to be. Then one night I was in Birmingham, Alabama. I was on my way to Meridian, Mississippi. Had to be there early the next morning. The roads were under repair. And I stopped at a service station to get directions. A young man not only gave me the directions, but he drew me a map. He said, sir, if you'll follow this map, I'll guarantee you no problem. You'll be there plenty of time. Well, I followed the directions exactly as he had given them to me. And an hour later, I was 45 miles further from Meridian than I had been when I got the directions. Now, I was not there because that's where I wanted to be. I was tired and sleepy. I wanted to be in bed. I was there because some dude had given me the wrong directions. May I suggest that if you're broke, if you're in debt, if you're despondent, if you're having trouble getting along with people, if you are having difficulties of one kind or another, I honestly do not believe that you're there because that is where you want to be. I believe there's a very good chance that you are there because over a period of time, you have heard and listened, by that I mean followed, the wrong directions. Now, don't get too comfortable with that thought because I'm quickly going to pull the rug out from under you. Somebody else might have had a hand in where you are at the moment, but where you go from here is going to be left entirely up to you. So don't get comfortable with that thought. See, the basic problem is a lot of people have the same difficulty that apparently I had. Now, I can relate to those of you who might be broke and in debt, because at age 45, though I had been earning money since I was 8 years old, though I'd been contributing to my family since I was 14 years old, though I'd been out and completely on my own since I was 17 years old. That's a lot of years of working. But at age 45, I was broke and in debt. And as to where I was going was a mystery. My career was not exactly in high gear. I don't know where you are, but I am saying to you that it's always too soon to quit. I'm saying that the future can be absolutely beautiful. The message I want to deliver throughout is a message of hope. See, one basic problem is a lot of people suffer from what I call garbage dump thinking. A good friend of mine, Dan Bellis, who lives in San Diego, undoubtedly the number one time management authority in this country, tells this little story. In a large southern city, there's a magnificent new shopping center. But for over 100 years, that shopping center was the city dump. They'd haul the garbage out there and dumped it until it was literally a garbage dump. It was a mess. And one day, the city fathers recognized that the city was growing in that direction. They persuaded the builders, when they excavated dirt for their buildings, to take that good, clean field dirt and haul it out and dump it on the garbage dump. Several years, tens of thousands of loads were dumped on the old garbage dump, and they kept packing it down. Finally, one day, the engineer said, hey, the foundation is ready. Let's build us a shopping center. And they did. But that shopping center is built on garbage, literally. See, I don't care how many people have dumped garbage in your life over a period of time. I don't care how many have told you you cannot do this or you have no future. I'm here to tell you that, yes, you do have a future. We can bury that old garbage, regardless of what your lot in life might be. You can absolutely build something very significant and very solid on it. The problem with most people when they have this garbage dump thinking, which is stinking thinking, as you know, it ends up being hardening of the attitudes, and that's the reason we always give you a little checkup from the neck up. The reason that it is so deadly is that it causes a lot of people to develop what we call a loser's limp. Now, if you're a football fan, you know what a loser's limp is. And just then, last time I saw the local team play, I knew we were in trouble when our punter signaled for a fair catch on the snap from center. I knew right then that we had a problem. And I knew it was all over when they blocked our kickoff. But anyhow, You've seen the offensive player, the wide receiver, get behind the defensive back. He reaches up, he snags a pass, and he heads for the end zone. The defensive back quickly recovers and takes out in hot pursuit. But when he gets about 20 yards from the end zone, he realizes he's not about to catch the guy with the ball. So he pulls up limping. Then everybody in the stand says, well, no wonder he couldn't catch him. Look, he's crippled. He's hurt. Now, that was his loser's limp. What is yours? See, a lot of times people say, well, you know, if I'd heard this 20 years ago, man, I really could have done something with my life. Others say, well, you know, I'm just not quite old enough, or I'm too tall, or I'm too short, or I'm too fat, or I'm too slim, or they come up with 10,001 excuses. The latest is, well, I'm just overqualified. Others are saying, well, you know, the only ones they're hiring now are women and minorities. Now, isn't that a delightful twist that we put on our loser's limp? See, folks, it's not what you've got, it's what you use that makes a difference. What we're going to do is we're going to bury all of that old garbage in this series. Let me give you a warning. Over a period of a lifetime, there have been a lot of garbage that has been dumped in your life. Einstein says that it takes 11 corrective inputs to overcome one incorrect input. Unless that input is put in there with tremendous conviction and an enormous amount of enthusiasm, and so we're going to be working on that. I love what Dr. Tony Campolo of Eastern College in Pennsylvania says, and this truly is profound. Dr. Campolo says that as important as our past is, as it relates to our present performance, it is not nearly as important as the way we see our future. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to stop the recorder and back that one up and play it again. As important as your past is, and it is important because it has brought you to where you are, but as important as it is not as important as the way you see your future. Now, how are we going to see the future? I love what my good friend Dr. John Maxwell from San Diego says. Dr. Maxwell says if there is faith in the future, there is power in the present. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to help you to develop that faith in the future, which means that you will have the power in the present to do some things that absolutely will make a difference. Now, obviously, motivation is going to play a part. Several years ago in Norfolk, Virginia, a reporter came to me and said, I'd like to get you to go to the blackboard and write the word motivation on it. And I did. Then he said, I'd like to get your picture, if you don't mind, pointing at the word. So I assumed my best pose, you know, and he raised his camera. But before he snapped the picture, he lowered it and he said, by the way, what is motivation? And I said, I can probably diagram it more easily than I can answer it. And so to the best of my ability, I drew a square. And then I broke it into 16 squares. And I said to the reporter, if I ask you how many were there, you'd probably immediately say 16. Most people do. But then virtually everybody says, no, the entire diagram is a square, so that brings it to 17. But if you look carefully, right in the very center is another one, and so that brings it to 18. But the exciting thing is, if you will notice, in the upper left-hand bit, if you'll come across 2 and down 2 and back across 2 and up 2, that's a square, so that brings it to 19, which means here's another one, that's 20, and here's one, that's 21, and here's another, that's 22. But if you will look again, if you will just come across 1 and then come down 2 and across 2 and up 2 and across 2, that's another one, so that's 23. That means that the same one on the other side is a square, that's 24. Here's another one, that's 25, and here's yet another one, that's 26. But if you will come all the way across 3 and then come down 3 and back across 3 and up 3, that's 27. That means here also is another one, that's 28. Here's yet another one, that's 29, and here's yet another square. Ladies and gentlemen, there are 30 squares. Now, I'm not trying to fool you, but I do tell folks I'm like a cross-eyed discus thrower. I don't set any records, but I do keep the crowd alert. So let me ask you this question. How many squares did I add after I drew the original figure? 14, okay. Let me ask it in a different way. How many squares did I add after I drew the original figure? Didn't add any, did I? All I did was say, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one. I just pointed out where they were. Now, that's very important because, you see, to educate, to motivate, is to pull out or to draw out. Now, I'm convinced you will get a great deal out of this course. But the prime reason for this program is this. It is designed to get a great deal more out of you. You've already got it. The question is recognizing it and bringing it out. Now, as you probably have noticed, I use a little humor in my presentation. At least I like to think it represents some humor. And here's the reason I use humor. Now, I did not know this when I started doing it. I started using humor because I noticed that on television, about every 9 or 10 minutes, they take a break. We have conditioned the American public to have an attention span of about 10 minutes. So about every 10 minutes, I'll lay a little one-liner on you, or funny or something, and that gives you a little mental stand-up. Now, I learned this later, but Dr. Avner Ziv at Tel Aviv University did a substantial study on it, discovered that humor enables you to retain things a lot longer. You learn more quickly. Humor also represents internal jogging. It is healthy. It is good for you. Now, we recommend that you listen to this series at least 16 times. A lot of times people say, 16 times? Yeah, because it takes about 16 times to really get the message implanted subliminally, subconsciously into your mind. You see, repetition is the mother of learning. And to emphasize that point, we can actually see something 10,000 times and still not see it. Now, I don't mean see something 10 miles away or even 100 yards away. I don't mean glancing at it. I mean you can flat look at something 10,000 times and still not see it. And I'm talking about something 2 feet away. Now, that sounds like a gross exaggeration, so let me see if I might demonstrate that to the live audience. And those who are listening on the recording, let me urge you to play right along with us. You'll have some fun with this. How many of you in the audience wear a wristwatch? See your hand? Okay. Now, do not look at that wristwatch. Did you know that the average American looks at his wristwatch 300 times a day? Oh, I didn't believe it either. They told me that. I said, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life. 300 times a day look at your wristwatch? When are you going to have time to do any work? Why, man, all you'd be doing is looking at your wristwatch. That's crazy. Get out of here. And then one day I broke the band on my watch. And for the next 2 days, my watch was in my pocket. And during the next 2 days, if I didn't look at that empty wrist 2,000 times, I didn't look at it at all. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Guarantee it, you'll look at his wristwatch 300 times a day. Now, that means if you've had your wristwatch a year, you've looked at it 10,000 times. How many of you have had your watch a year? Okay. Now, if you've looked at your wristwatch 10,000 times, surely there's nothing I can ask you about it that you don't know the answer to. But I'll bet you $9 to a nickel, which is my favorite non-bet, that some of you are a little nervous that I'm about to ask you something you can't answer about it. I'm going to ask you 3 questions. Now, don't answer them out loud. And please don't turn to your next door neighbor and tell them the answer. You're going to get your chance in just a minute. Question number one, does your wristwatch have regular numerals or Roman numerals? How many of you are in trouble? Okay. Question number two, does it have numerals at all? Are they slashes or dots or blanks or emblems or a combination of a lot of different things? Now, question number three is a toughie. Oh, is it ever tough? It's even unfair. Has 4 parts. And for you educators, they're not multiple choice. The first part is, what's at the 12 o'clock slot? Now think these through. What's at the 3 o'clock slot? What's at the 6 o'clock slot? And exactly what is at the 9 o'clock spot? Now think them through. And as soon as you've thought them through, I want you to carefully As a matter of fact, undoubtedly, for the first time since you've owned your watch, I want you to very carefully look at your watch. Well, I can't always tell exactly what murmurs and giggles means, but based on what I'm observing, I believe some of you might have missed one of the questions. How many of you who've had your watch over a year missed one of the questions, okay? How many of you remember just a few seconds ago when I said, now I want you to carefully, as a matter of fact, undoubtedly for the first time since you've owned your watch, I want you to very carefully look at your watch. Remember me saying that a few seconds ago? Okay, what time is it? Now that I've got your attention, you know, we have eyes to see but see not. We have ears to hear but hear not. We have hands to feel but we handle not. A good friend of mine, psychologist Charles Lowry, says that a lot of times when we hear something, if we only hear it once and hear it quickly, or read something once and read it quickly, it does not really move into our long-term memory. And so we never really learned it. It wasn't a question of forgetting it. We never really learned it. And what you do when you listen over and over is it becomes a part of you. It moves into that long-term memory. As you know, life has an awful lot of choices. You can choose to take what I've just been saying literally, because you see, over your lifetime, a lot of garbage has been dumped in. Now what we're doing is we want to bury all of this old garbage. So we'll be involving a lot of choices. For example, for 24 years of my adult life, by choice, I weighed well over 200 pounds. Now the reason I say by choice is because I have never accidentally eaten anything. It's always been by choice. And if I choose to eat too much today, then I have chosen to weigh too much tomorrow. If I choose to get drunk tonight, then I have chosen to feel miserable tomorrow. If I choose to light up a cigarette, just one, that means I have chosen to die 14 minutes earlier than I otherwise would have died. We go through life making choices, but every choice has an end result. If I choose to be rude and ugly to you, and that's my choice, I have chosen to be treated in a rude and ugly manner by you. But if I choose to be pleasant and kind to you, then I have chosen, in 98% of the cases, I have chosen myself to be treated in the same manner by you. Choices. The redhead and I, incidentally, when I talk about my wife, I call her the redhead. When I'm talking to her, it's sugar baby. Her name is Jean. We were in our favorite ice cream parlor one night here, I guess it's 4 or 5 years ago, and as we sat there eating our ice cream, in walked a young fella and his girlfriend. I surmise that he is about 25 years old. And as he walked in, I nudged the redhead. I said, look at there, sweetheart. She said, I see him. I said, I wonder what happened to him. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, look at him. He's hurt. He's been in some kind of an accident. Oh, honey, she said, he's not hurt. He hadn't been in an accident. He's been to the barber shop or the beauty shop. I said, you mean he paid money to look like that? She said, sure, honey, it happens all the time. And in my lifetime, I have never seen a human being that badly mutilated from the ears up. I'm telling you. Awesome is the only way I can describe it, is awesome. It looked like the governor's pardon got to the warden right after he plugged in the chair. Now, folks, don't misunderstand. It sounds like I'm being judgmental. It sounds like I'm being critical. Please believe me when I say that I'm being neither. All I'm doing is reporting what I saw. The beautiful thing about our country is that we can look exactly like we choose to look. I do not exaggerate when I say I would go to war and fight for that young man's right to look exactly like he does. I hope he'll do the same thing for me. You bet you I'd fight for his right to look just like he does, but I wouldn't give him a job. Now, what am I saying? I am saying very simply that when he chose to look that way, he chose to eliminate 98% of all employment opportunities. All I'm saying again is that every choice we make has an end result. When you make the choice, you've chosen the result of whatever the choice might be. About 16 years ago, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. So I decided to get on a diet and exercise program. Up until then, my idea of exercise was just to fill the tub, take a bath, pull the plug, and fight the current. I mean, that was it. That's not much of an exercise program. During the next 9.5 months, I learned to hate jogging and hate joggers. How many of you hate joggers? Now tell me the truth. Every time I saw one, he's jumping up and down and whooping and shouting and hollering and talking about how good he felt. There I was, hurting and hating every step. But I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I stayed with it. Never forget that beautiful spring day in Portland, Oregon. High noon, temperature about 78 degrees. I was jogging on Portland State University campus. As I was jogging, I became aware of the fact that the ground was flowing smoothly beneath my feet, and I was breathing easily. That day, I changed my vocabulary. You don't pay the price for good health. You pay the price for poor health. You enjoy the benefits of good health. You see, there are the words again. When you use the right words, they have an impact in our mind. We don't pay the price for success. We pay the price for failure. We enjoy the benefits of success. You don't pay the price for a good marriage. You pay the price for a poor one. You enjoy the benefits of a good one. January the 5th, 1987, I went back to the Cooper Clinic. That's where I started. I go every 18 months. On the treadmill test, which I, as I say, take every 18 months, January 5th, 1987, I stayed on the treadmill longer than any active player in the National Football League who's taken the test, and many, many of them have. I'm 61 years old. I have a resting heart rate of 41. I can outrun 98% of the college kids in America today on a 5-mile run. I can do things I never could have dreamed of doing when I was 25 years old. My energy level is higher. But I want to tell you, it was the toughest thing I ever did. For 10 months, I hated and hurt every step I took. But for 16 years, I've had a magnificent time jogging. I've run with a temperature as much as 40 degrees below zero. The wind just blowing like crazy. Now, that's what was happening outside. I mean, I was running inside. I don't want to mislead any of you on that one. But I love to run. I love to run. In December of 1987, I hurt my back. Not seriously, but for 2 months, I could not jog. I picked up 8 pounds because I couldn't jog. My body retains ice cream. And I could tell a difference, but I do want to say this, that you first of all expend the effort by choice, then the rewards are there. I want to close this first session with this. You know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, what old Zig is saying is making some sense to me, and I think I'm going to do that. Just as soon as I get around to it, man, I'm going to do that. Well, to make it easier for you, my business card is rather unique. It's round. On one side, it has our name and address and phone number. On the other side, it has one word. It's T-U-I-T. Now, this is round, and it's a tuit. That means it's a round tuit. So for those of you who've been waiting to get started until you got around to it, ladies and gentlemen, here's your round to it. So let's go ahead and do it.